This week is Parshas Vayakhel. Parshas Vayakhel. Really, when you read through Vayakhel, you find almost nothing new because it's just repeat. I mean, even Rashi almost doesn't have anything to say in the entire Parsha. There's no Parsha that has as little Rashi as Vayakhel because it's mamash a repetition. Really, in Truma and Tetzaveh, where Hashem gave over the mitzvah of the Mishkan and the Kelim and how to make it and what to make and so on and so forth. And Vayakhel is repeat. Moshe says, now he gathers the Jewish people and he tells it over to them. That's really what the vast majority of Vayakhel is. Many years, Vayakhel goes together with Pikudei and you finish off the Chumash that way. But this year, because it's a leap year, so Vayakhel is separate and Pikudei is separate. So this week is Vayakhel. So let's give a look at the first psukim at the beginning of the Parsha. Excuse me. Vayakhel Moshe Eskaladas B'nei Yisrael Vayemer Alehem. Moshe gathers the Jewish people, the entire congregation of the Jewish people. He says to them, Eila Hadvarim Asher Tziva Hashem Lasos Osam. These are the things that Hashem said to do. He goes on to say, Sheshes Yamim Te Asem Alacha, 6 days a week you shall do work. Vayom Hashvi Yi Elachem Kodesh, the seventh day shall be holy. Shabbos Shabboson LaHashem. I think there's a lamed missing here. A Shabbos of Shabbos for Hashem. And then Vayomer Moshe Eskaladas B'nei Yisrael Lemor. Moshe tells the Jewish people, Zahad Dabar Shasiv Hashem Lemor. This is what Hashem said. Kchu Meitchem Truma LaHashem. Take Truma for Hashem. And he goes off to all the concepts of what you're supposed to take and what you're supposed to make and what you're supposed to give for the Mishkan. So, right in the Parsha, when Moshe is going to give over, the mitzvah of the Mishkan and all the details, he puts in the mitzvah of Shabbos. This is not the first or second or third time that Shabbos is mentioned in the Torah. Shabbos is already one of the Aseres HaDibros. Shabbos is already mentioned even before the Aseres HaDibros. But nevertheless, here it's put in again, and as the Gemara tells us, he's saying even when you're building the Mishkan, Shabbos, you got to always keep Shabbos no matter what. That's on a pshat level.
I saw somewhere, why dafka here, why not at the beginning, Parshas Teruma? So the answer might be because before the Chet HaEgel, the Mishkan would have been permanent. So it would have been Doche Shabbos, overriding Shabbos. But now, because it's not going to be permanent, because originally it would have been done by Moshe Rabbeinu, it would have been permanent. Now it's being done by Pesalo. So therefore, we have to be careful not to violate Shabbos.
Interesting. Where's this from? Do you remember?
Can't remember.
Interesting. Okay. When did this happen? This Vayakhel Moshe, when did this gathering happen? Says Rashi. L'macharas Yom HaKippurim k'sheyorad min hahor. This is the day after Yom Kippur, when Moshe comes down from the mountain. We've discussed in the past that from the giving of Torah on Shavuos until Yom Kippur, Moshe was on the mountain three sets of times, each time for 40 days. Really, that takes you from Shavuos till Yom Kippur. Until then, they hardly saw him. He went down for 40 days, came down, broke the luchos, went back up, was there 40 days, came down, turned around and went back up. And Yom Kippur, he comes down with the second set of luchos, and that's when Hashem famously says, "Salachti kidvarecha, I've atoned, I've given atonement and forgiveness to the people," and that's why Yom Kippur is the day of atonement forever. And so the next day, Moshe comes down from the mountain, and he starts teaching them Torah, and he teaches them these mitzvahs. That's what Rashi says.
What happened on that Yom Kippur? Did they do anything special? No,
So that's a good question.
He came down the day after.
No, he came on Yom Kippur. He came on Yom Kippur. This is the next day he sat down and talked.
He gathered all the people.
Right, the next day. So what exactly their mitzvahs of that actually Yom Kippur was is a good question. I don't know the answer. I don't know. Okay, couple of points, and I numbered here 5 points of thought on these psukim. Number one, why was there the need for this gathering? I mean, there's hundreds of mitzvahs in the Torah. And Vayomer Moshe, Moshe tells the people, whatever, Vayomer Moshe, Vayedaber Moshe, why was this necessary to gather everyone, as if what he's going to say now has to be said to everyone together? What's unique about this statement that had to be done in a state of hakil where everyone is gathered together? Okay, number two, what did Moshe tell them in the first pasuk? If you take a hard look at the pasuk, it says, he gathered the Jewish people and he says, these are the things Hashem said to do. And what are the things? Because the Mishkan, there's another Vayomer for that. Right? In the next pasuk, after the two dots here on the second line, it says, Vayomer Moshe, called Aspen Yisrael Lemor, and he said, these are the things to do. So what Amira, what statement did he tell them? Because all the pasuk says to keep Shabbos, but this is not the first time he said to keep Shabbos. Shabbos is old news. Again, they learned Shabbos a few times already. Yeah. So what is the Amira that the first pasuk is talking about. And the Mefarshim talk about that, that Amira doesn't seem to go anywhere. It says he gathered them and he said, and then, oh, and he said to bring the things to the Mishkan. So what is the Amira of the third, of the first pasuk? Number three, the wording, now we don't have vowels in the Sefer Torah, we don't have vowels on the page here either, but it says, Sheshes Yamim Te'aseh Melacha. It says Te'aseh with a Tzeri under the Tav, Te'aseh. Regular Hebrew would be Sheshes Yamim Ta'aseh. Tasa, to do malacha. Teyase almost makes it sound in Hebrew grammar, it should be done on its own. Teyase, it should happen. So why does it say that 6 days malacha should happen instead of saying sheshes yamim tasa, 6 days you will do malacha? So that's question number three. Question number four, he says 6 days you'll do malacha and the seventh day will be Shabbos. But he doesn't just say Shabbos. He says Shabbos Shabbosom. It'll be a double Shabbos. What does that mean? Typically, we know when we hear Shabbos Shabboson, what do we think of?
Yom Kippur.
But here it doesn't mean Yom Kippur. Here it says 6 days, your work will be done. And the seventh day will be a Shabbos of Shabbos for Hashem. What does that mean? And finally, what's the connection of all of this with the day after Yom Kippur? Right? Rashi says, all of this was said, Moshe comes down from the mountain. This is the first thing he wants to tell them the day after Yom Kippur. What's unique about the mitzvahs of this opener that's connected to the day after Yom Kippur? So these are 5 points to ponder, and I'm not going to deal with all of them at the same time. But 5 points over here quickly. Number one, why was everyone gathered for this? Number two, what exactly did he tell them in the first mitzvah? Number three, why does it say 6 days, te'aseh malacha, malacha should be done, instead of saying ta'aseh malacha? What's the concept of Shabbos Shabboson, a double Shabbos, and why was all this on the day after Yom Kippur? These are 5 points to ponder. So, in order to get to this, I want to start with one key. And that is, there is a pasuk in Tehillim, which says, and that's the next paragraph here, in bold letters, Yigia kapecha ki tochal, ashrecha v'tov lach. Literally, that means, the toil of your hands, you will eat. In other words, a person will live off the toil of their hands. Ashrecha v'tov lach, one who lives in that way, that they work hard with their hands, they're fortunate and it'll be good to them. And Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos famously, Ashrecha b'olam hazeh v'tov lach b'olam haba. You'll have a good this world, you'll have a good next world. A person who lives by the yigia kapecha, the toil of one's hands. What does that mean? To live by the toil of one's hands. Why dafka the hands? Not every job is done with the hands. I mean, some jobs are manual hand labor, and some jobs are a person sitting behind the desk or doing the computer work or the paperwork. What is the concept of yigia kapecha, the toil of one's hands? So there's a beautiful idea, a Hasidic idea that goes like this. It says, when a person is working, there is sometimes that a person gets so involved in their work, they get their mind and their heart so involved in their work that they're totally engrossed in what they're doing. And really, a person should be getting involved in their work, their more external parts, just to do what's got to be done. The mind and the heart should be free to connect to Hashem, to learn Torah, to daven. When one gets so totally invested in their work, that's all they think about. And then they come to shul and that's where their mind is. And then they're trying to learn Torah, but their mind is floating off into their work. Yeah. So they're totally invested in their work. Now, this, again, we always say present completely excluded, right? We don't know about these things.
Happens often.
But we don't believe you. But there are people who say that it happens, that they're so invested in their work that that's where their head is, that's where their heart is, and therefore they can't daven properly, or they can't learn Torah properly, because they're so invested. And what the Mishnah is alluding to when it says Yugia kapecha kisochal, it means that a person's attitude has to be like this. Really, my head, my heart is for Torah, for mitzvahs, for Hashem. Hashem wants me to go to work. Hashem, there's a mitzvah that I got to support my family and I got to be able to buy whatever I need and do and give tzedakah. So I have a mitzvah to go to work, so I'll do it. I'll do it for Hashem. But I don't invest everything there. I'm not so totally invested and lost in my work. I do what I got to do, and then I'm able to close up shop and go home and put myself and learn Torah the way it should be and daven the way it should be and be devoted to my family the way they should be, because I never invest my innermost kochos in the work that I do. I think the story is of one of the Rebbes, I don't remember which one, I think of Shalom Dovber, if I'm not mistaken, the fifth Rebbe of Chabad, that he saw a chassid and he noticed that this chassid was getting too totally involved in the work. And his work was with shoes, with galoshes, with boots. That's what he worked. And the Rebbe once told him, he says, Rebbe Yankel, whatever his name is, he says, He said, I've seen many times feet in galoshim, but I see by you, your head is in your galoshim. He says, take your head out of the galoshim. Bring your head to shul. Your feet, you know, feet can be in galoshim. In other words, there is that idea, which is obviously not an easy avoda, and it takes a tremendous amount of effort. But that because work is consuming, we know work is consuming, and that's just the nature of things. And yet, when one has true emunah and bitachon in Hashem, and recognizes that my ultimate parnasa comes from Hashem, my ultimate parnasa is destined from Hashem, Rosh Hashanah, and so on and so forth. And I got to do what I got to do. And I've given everyone has their own talents and abilities. I got to do it. But it's more about doing what I got to do, not that is where I become so totally invested. And sometimes, you know, there are people, and again, we all know different types of people, but there's people who are total workaholics and you can't talk to them at all. You can't talk to them. They're so busy, they have no headspace for anything else. And the Mishnah is telling us that one who is so invested in their work, so they don't live a good life, physically or spiritually. Physically, they have no time for things. Spiritually, they definitely don't. And that's what it says, Yigia kapecha kisochel, when one is the toil of their hands, then ashrecha v'tovlach, as we said from Pirkei Avos, ashrecha, you're fortunate in this world. V'tovlach b'olam haba, you're fortunate in the next world, because this person is able to have a decent and a pleasant and a peaceful life in this world, and definitely able to have olam haba, because their mind and their heart, their deeper kochos are invested in the right places, and never get overly invested in, you know, trying to make that additional dollar, right? Now,
where does that relate to one of the five?
Oh, so we'll get. I'll bring it back to that. So based on that, we'll zoom into question number three. And here's a very beautiful idea. What's the difference in Hebrew between sheshes yamim ta'aseh malacha to sheshes yamim te'aseh malacha? Ta'aseh is that I'm doing it. I'm working on doing it. Te'aseh is as if it's being done on its own. When a person recognizes that my parnassah comes from Hashem, and I got to do what I got to do. I don't invest myself in it in that level. Then it's in a form of te'asa, not ta'asa. Ta'asa means I got to do it. I got to make it. I got to make every dollar. I have to work very hard. I have to invest myself, all my mind and effort. Te'asa is that sense of feeling, I'll do what I got to do, and Hashem will give the bracha. Hashem has His brachas for me. I'll get up in the morning. I'll do my hours. I'll do what I got to do. But or some use the lashon of, I did my hishtadlus, right? I did what Hashem wants for me. I don't have to do more. That's Hashem's business. I opened up the vessel, I did what I got to do, and Hashem will give me, I don't have to, you know, I'm not the boss. I don't have to sleep with it at night with those dollars. I remember I once heard a speech, I don't remember from whom, I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was by one of the Siyum HaShas's over here, but probably like 14 years ago or 25 years, whatever it was. And I don't remember who it was, but I remember I went with the yeshiva. And one of the, was it Zev Cohn? I don't remember, but he said that he took a group of Balabatim from Chicago and they went to Israel. They went to, I think, in Gula, one of those stores. And he comes into the shop and he has 5, 6, 7, 8 American guys with him. And they're walking into a shop in Gula. You'd think the owner would be excited. You know, this is going to be a good day. They're walking in, the guy's closing up. He says, where are you going? He says, I'm going for Mincha. Now it's time for Mincha. He says, but, you know, it's left another 2 hours. You could have Mincha. And I have here a number of, you know, customers will buy things. The guy says, sorry, this is the time I go for Mincha. He said, we'll give you parnasa. He said, I did my ishtadlus for the day. I'm done. I'm going to Mincha. I remember, he said, he saw that, his mind was blown. A person who had that level of emunah Hashem, I do what I do, I have my hours, I work, now it's time for Hashem. I'm done. Right? He says, that's the pshat, a person who is te'asa malacha. He doesn't feel like he has to do it, and he has to make it, and he has to get it done. He feels, Hashem will do it. The bracha will come. I'm there, I'll do what I got to do, but the bracha comes from Hashem. It's not mine. So, that's the idea of te'asa versus ta'asa. The malacha is being done. I do what I got to do. I'm not investing. Now, when a person has that type of feeling throughout the week, then the Shabbos is a special Shabbos. Why? Because on Shabbos there is a mitzvah, and if we go over here to the next bold letters, it says in Aseret HaDibros, Sheshes Yamim Ta'avod Vasisa Kol Melachtecha. Right, 6 days a week, 6 days a week you work and you do all of your work. What is that supposed to mean? On Shabbos, on Friday I finished all of my work. There's a lot to do. When I close the door on Friday, I know there's a lot waiting for me on Monday, right? Or Sunday. So what does the Pasuk mean when it says, 6 days a week you work, you do all your work? Says Rashi, Kishatovo Shabbos, Uh-huh. Come Shabbos, in a person's mind, it's all done. There's nothing to think about. There's no work, and there's no shop, and there's no business. Shabbos is all closed. Right? But how can a person really get there? If I'm fully invested a whole week in it, and my mind and heart are there, comes on Shabbos, but I turn a switch off, like my mind is not there anymore, my heart's not there, I was there all week. But if a whole week it was the work of my hands, if a whole week I never got invested in it in that level that it was consuming, rather a whole week I was working like that, Yidin Me'esharim, a whole year week I was working, because Hashem said, Hashem told me my Shabbos, I work 6 hours a day, 8 hours, 10 hours a day, whatever it is. Then comes Shabbos, I'm free. Then I can have a real emes of Shabbos. Because the whole week I wasn't invested in it to a fault. I was doing what I got to do. If a whole week I was doing what I was going to do, Shabbos, when I closed the shop, now it's Hashem's Shabbos, my mind's not going there, my heart's not going there, because even in the whole week, I was just doing as much as I needed. And that's what the pasuk means. Now we'll go back to question number four. When a person works a whole week in a way of te'ase malacha, then Shabbos is Shabbos Shabbosom. It's not just a regular Shabbos. It's a Shabbos Dikas Shabbos. It's a Shabbos that I'm really able to enjoy, really able to get into it, really able to daven properly, able to learn properly, because my mind is truly free, because the work of the week was proper. Shabbos is going to reflect the whole week. The way I work throughout the week is going to help, is going to indicate how much on Shabbos I'll be able to invest truthfully in the Ruchnius of Shabbos, in the family, in the internal Shabbos. Because the week was a proper week, then the Shabbos is a proper Shabbos. And that's what the pasuk means. Sheshes yamim te'ase melacha. When throughout the 6 days of the week, I'm not so invested. Rather, I feel like I'll do what I have to do and Hashem will give the bracha. Then Shabbos will be a Shabbos Shabbos, and Shabbos will be a special Shabbos. Once we understand this teaching, that's what was being said in this pasuk. We asked question number two was, what was the Amira? What did Hashem say? What's news here? This was news, a new way of fulfilling Shabbos properly. True, the Torah already told us the mitzvah of Shabbos, we already learned Shabbos, Naseres, Hadibros, but here we learned that the way that a person can truly appreciate Shabbos, and the way a person can truly live a Shabbos, Shabbos on Shabbos, a Shabbos that's totally higher, Moruchni Sige Shabbos, is if the work throughout the week was in such a way that it never really involved and so to speak, totally consumed my mind and my heart. I think I once said here a story that I heard about an elder chassid. His name was, I never knew him, he passed away before I was born, but he lived in Israel. His name was Rav Chaim Moshe Alperovitch. So it seems he came out of Russia, wherever he was, and he came to Israel, and they gave him a job as a manual laborer, I think a bricklayer or something. But he was working there, and he was slapping the bricks and building them, putting the mortar, putting them in the right place. But the people noticed that he's more of a refined person. He doesn't have to be the bricklayer. And they offered him a job in the office. So he sat there a couple of days, and he came back to me and said, you know, send me back. I want to be a bricklayer. I don't want to work in the office. They said, well, it's fine, but why? He says, because when I laid bricks, he says, the job didn't consume my mind at all. It was just doing this manual stuff. My mind, I was saying Mishnayis, I was going through Gemara, I was reviewing. I wanted my mind free. I don't want my mind involved in my work. So give me a job that I can do with my hands. That's what he said. This is Chaim Moshe, a very special yid. So most people aren't that way. Most people aren't bricklayers, Baruch Hashem. But nevertheless, the message over here is that our mind should never become the servant of our work, and our heart shouldn't become the servant of our work. We should never become so overly involved there that there's no place for anything else, and there's no ability to close the shop and say, now I'm going to daven. Okay, so that covers questions 2, 3, and 4 in the initial 5, right? We know what was uniquely said over here. We know the idea of the te'asa, the way of working in a way that I don't feel that I'm the one that has to do everything and make it happen. The ultimate burden is not on my shoulders. And finally, that's the way we'll be able to appreciate Shabbos properly, have Shabbos Shabbosim. Okay, what does all this have to do with the day after Yom Kippur, that Moshe Rabbeinu feels it important to tell the Jewish people it's the day after Yom Kippur, and he gathers everyone together, right? That was question number one. He gathers everyone. I have to tell you this piece of information. Why now? What is it today, what is it at this point in the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu has to tell the people to do this? And here we have a very beautiful idea. What's really unique about this day after Yom Kippur? The Jewish people just received their atonement for the greatest sin. Which sin? Excuse me? The Egel Azov. The Egel Azov is the sin of idolatry. Now, what is idolatry essentially? Where does idolatry, really, where does idolatry come to the world from? It's such a strange concept. What does idolatry even mean? That people believe that that this golden calf, it's the creator. What does it mean? What's the logic behind idolatry? And who began idolatry? Whose idea was it in the first place? When Hashem created the world, Adam and Chava knew Hashem face to face. So where did it come from? Right? So Rambam talks about this. Rambam Maimonides gives, he has his Hilchos Avodah Zarah. The Rambam, the book of Mishneh Torah has 14 books. The first book is Sefer Hamada, which is the book of the basics of Judaism. One of them is Hilchos Avodah Zarah, the laws of idolatry, the Torah laws of idolatry. In the beginning of the Torah laws of idolatry, the Rambam gives a quick history of where idolatry comes from. And I want to read it with you. It's the last two paragraphs on the page. Rambam Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Aleph Halach Aleph. Idolatry begins with the grandson of Adam, Enosh. He says, "Bimei Enosh Tau bnei Adam Tau's Gadol." In the days of Enosh, a great mistake came to the world. V'nivra atzas chachma yaseder. People became silly. The Enosh atzma minatoyim hoya. Enosh himself was one who made that mistake. What was their mistake? Zuhay satausa. They said, "Hoya velokim barakochavim elu v'galgalim lahanigas olam." Hashem created the stars. Hashem created the constellations through which the world runs. V'nesanam b'morom, and Hashem put them in the heavens. V'cholak lehem kavod, Hashem gave them this honor and glory. V'heim shamashim hamishamshim lefanov, and these are their servants who served before Hashem. Therefore, re'uyin heim l'shabcham l'faram v'lachol lehem kavod. We have to give them honor. We have to praise them. After all, these are the great servants of Hashem. This is the first idolatry. They didn't say that Hashem didn't create the world. They didn't think that the sun and the moon and the stars created the world. They said the sun and the moon and the stars are created by Hashem. But Hashem gave them so much prestige. Hashem made them the great luminaries. Hashem works through the constellations. So we should accord to them honor and respect. And in fact, they said...
Enosh, which is the author of book of Enosh?
No, a book of Enosh?
Yeah.
What do you mean? What's the book of Enosh?
I don't know, but I hear there's a book of Enosh.
I don't know.
In Jews from Ethiopia, they do have them in their own, like we have.
I hear you.
So they have book of Enosh.
I don't know. So then, and they said, "V'zeu ratzon HaKel Baruch Hu." This is the ratzon of Hashem. L'gadil u'l'chabed mishe gidlei v'kibdoi, that we should praise and glorify those that Hashem glorifies. K'mosh ha'melech rotze l'chabed ha'omnim l'fanov, v'zehu kvodo shel melech. So, what did the first idolaters say? Again, not that there's no Hashem. There's Hashem, and He's the creator, but He created sun, moon, stars. He gave them chashivus. If He gave them chashivus, then we should be machshiv them. We should also talk about their greatness and honor them and glorify them. And the Rambam goes on to say how this mistake then took on face after face after face, to the point where the people forgot about Hashem altogether.
How are they glorifying or paying respect to the sun and the moon? By doing what?
They were talking about their greatness. They were thanking them. They were calling them exalted, and so on and so forth. Let me look when I finish. Okay, give me a moment. Okay, and then he says the Rambam goes on, and it's the last paragraph on the page. Kivan she'ala davar ze alivam. Once people thought this, hiskilu livnos likochavim hechalos. Then they started building different like chambers or sanctuaries in honor of the stars. Ulakriv len karbanos. Then they started bringing karbanos to the stars. Ulashabcham, ulafaram, and to praise them and glorify them, bidvarim, ulashtachavos the mulam, they bow towards them. Kedela hasig ritzon habore bidata mara. Well, they said, well, this is what Hashem wants. It's like a king who has big ministers. The king's happy when I honor his ministers. Vizahoya ikra vodas kachavim. This is what idolatry was. And then again, then it snowballed. And then the next generation forgot about Hashem altogether. And then it was about the stars. Then it was about the statue of the stars. And that was the snowball effect of Avodah Zarah. What's the important idea here? What is Avodah Zarah? Where does it essentially come from? From attributing significance to something else in the way. I believe in Hashem. But that's also important. You know, that's also an important concept. And therefore, that starts becoming significant in one's mind as well. And then it becomes more significant. And then it takes over. And then you're a full-blown idolater. But what's important to remember is Avodah Zarah comes from one almost subtle mistake, which is when I start attributing significance to the middleman, the intermediary, the conduit becomes important. As soon as the conduit becomes important, then step by step by step, I can have a full-blown Avodah Zarah. To stay clear of Avodah Zarah is by always remembering the conduit is only a conduit. It's only a conduit. And my focus has to be always directly on the source. And all the conduits are merely conduits. And when I can remember every conduit is merely a conduit, then I'll never get into trouble. But when the conduits start attributing their own significance, that's where the trouble of Avodah Zarah starts. So here comes the idea. It's the day after the Egel. It's the day after Yom Kippur. We just got over an Egel. We were just atoned for. We just got our Mechila Slicha. Moshe Rabbeinu sits down with the Eden. He says, come, huddle. I need everyone. I got to talk to everyone. Vayakil Moshe. What do I want to tell you guys? I want to tell you guys that, you know, all of us did Avodah Zarah, right? We gotta be smarter than that. From now on, we can never, ever attribute significance to the conduit. So, like, what are you talking about, Moshe Rabbeinu? Where are we attributing significance to the conduit? He says, when you go to work every day. When we go to work every day, if one starts thinking, oh, my work is gonna be my parnasa, and if I'll put in more effort and more of this, then I'll have parnasa, then I'll have more parnasa. He says, what I'm doing is, my work is becoming a little bit of an Avodah Zarah. I'm putting my efforts in, the conduit is going to feed me. When a Yid remembers that the parnasa comes from Hashem, and the bracha comes from Hashem, and I got to do what I got to do, then he works properly like a Yid. Then it's Yigia Kapecha Kisochel. Then it's Te'ase Malacha. He never gets lost in the workload. He never gets so invested that becomes, I have no place in my head for davening. When I have no place in my head for davening and learning, that means I got lost in the conduit. That means I attributed too much chashivos, too much significance to the work, to the conduit, and I forgot where it's coming from. And that's why this lesson is the day after Yom Kippur. He comes down after Yom Kippur. We're just finished with Chet with Avodah Zarah. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I got to talk to you people about how a Yid goes to work. And if you'll work properly, you'll never attribute significance to the conduit. You'll always remember it comes from Hashem. Then you'll work as much as you have to. Your mind and your heart will never be overly invested there. Come Shabbos, you'll have Shabbos, and you'll have a real Shabbos that you can really celebrate with Hashem, and you don't have to think about your parnasa and your work at all. That's all when you're focused on Hashem Himself. And then you'll never end up by a state of Avodah Zarah, because you'll always be focused on Hashem. You'll never make the mistake of attributing too much significance to the conduit. You'll work properly. You'll be able to daven properly. You'll be able to learn Torah properly. And you'll be able to have a beautiful Shabbos, a real Shabbos, that's really, really invested in Ruchnius, because all of that conduit will never become the center of your mind. And that's why Moshe gives them this lesson on the day after Yom Kippur.
Very good. But still, you know, why it is bad right away with Shabbos?